is watching how your staff interacts with the individuals that are coming in. It's really wonderful to see because, again, in our line of work, you don't know who's watching you. And it's very important that when you're working with these individuals and you're supporting them, right, you're doing so at the highest level because it's a big deal, right? And so having the community really behind us in terms of the resources around us is really, really great because those are the things that we're going to end up leaning on in order to continue to grow.
You're listening to the Communitas of New York podcast, where we invite you, our business-focused listener, to join us in our strategic focus on business development. In our first season, we viewed the constellation of stories generated by Communitas Ventures Accelerator Program alumni creating positive impact in communities in New York. We explore how community-driven founders navigate the challenges of accessing the right resources at the right time, how they stay true to their respective missions, and how they best manage their potential. We welcome you as we hear tales of trials and successes, as well as valuable advice from our interviewee entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Monique T. Marshall. This is episode 3 with Lucas Addo of Track Activities and Elios. Lucas, welcome to Communitas of New York. I am excited to have this conversation. The energy is already flowing, so welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed being invited on to be able to talk a little bit more about my venture.
Yeah, we're excited that you agreed to be on the show. And I am so excited to tell people about your journey and the amazing things that you are doing at Track Activities. So let's start off with talking about your journey and what got you into Track Activities and what inspired you to start this innovative company.
I think for the most part, I didn't necessarily have a framework when I was starting out towards my entrepreneurship journey. It sort of happened abruptly. I was working for a company called CUSAC, a great company, by the way, and I was their behavior intervention specialist at that time. But prior to that, I had worked at different companies, sort of playing the same role within the field of special needs. And one of the big things that just kept coming up was it would be great if there was a company that can really provide resources as well as therapy that could be very actively engaging. Because what I kept finding out from a lot of the families that would visit, will come for a meeting during every quarterly, will be that, you know, every time they walk into the program, they saw that their child or their son or their daughter was sort of isolated, not being engaged as much as they possibly can be. And it felt like we were just sort of babysitting them at that point. And so it kind of got me thinking, wow, if I could create a company that could be a bit more actively engaging, it would be really, really wonderful. And so at that moment is when I thought to myself, it would be great to kind of put a business plan together as to how my business would go. And fortunately, after I think 8 months, I was able to develop a business plan for Track Autism, and I started my entrepreneurship August 8th of 2018.
Wow, that is great. That is good. Like 8 months after a business plan, all the great things. For you, when you were developing the company and also thinking about your mission, what did you say would be, this is what Track is going to do in terms of solving this gap in the community, whether it be education or public health? What did you say this is what it's going to be?
At that moment in time, I'm being honest. My aim really was to just offer like activities that could be very creative. And my main goal was to work with the adult population at that time, right? I wanted to create a business that was really centered around just active engagement, right? At all times, right? So whether it's yoga, whether it's music, whether it's dance, I wanted to be creative. And early on, that was really my main goal, right? Was to build around that and just kind of see where it goes from there.
Being that you mentioned your previous company that you were working with and then your experience as a behavior intervention specialist, how did you intersect this experience with the kind of business oriented thinking that needed to happen in order to launch your company?
That's a great question. Largely, well, I always knew this, right? I knew my position very well, but I didn't know exactly how I would be wearing the cap of a CEO, right? Like I had no idea how that was going to go, right? But at the very least, I knew that I was very, very good at one, being able to be a clinician, being able to help in terms of creating a behavior support plan for an individual in order to provide therapy, as well as having the social skills to interact with families, being able to market, right? In terms of what our program and activities would all be about. But I didn't quite know exactly how all of that would translate over in terms of being, let's just say, a CEO of a company. Like that was the unknown. Right. Mm-hmm. The known was being able to be on a level of a one-to-one and working with the child or the adult. But outside of that, there wasn't much else. Right. I was kind of walking into the unknown.
Yeah. So, Lucas, I think that is phenomenal that you mentioned that, because for a lot of people, they think that I cannot do something if I don't know how this is going to work out. I don't want to feel like I don't know the answer before I jump into this. So what made you, and then on the other hand, it makes me think about the fact that sometimes people say, well, you have to be a little insane to be an entrepreneur.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So for you, how did you take this step of leap of faith and not know the answer, or how to build a business per se?
Listen, because it's a podcast, I'm going to be all the way honest, right?
Let's do it.
So when I quit in August of 2018, right? So the first month was great, right? Because I still had some money saved up that I was living on, right? But it wasn't after after September is when I was like, okay, now I have to dip into my 401k, right? So because I was so inspired and I was so motivated by the fact that I'm going to get this business to work, that I thought to myself, well, I'm going all the way all in, right? So here I was running out of money. And by, I want to say, 4 to 6 months into it, I've now depleted my savings account, right? And now at this very moment, you're starting to think, okay, well, as long as we get the business going, things are going to be good. I didn't know it was going to take me 3 years until we were able to get the idea off the ground after quitting, my main job. So throughout that whole process, you do almost have to, you almost have to become a bit insane to believe in an idea, especially an idea that after 3 years, you haven't really seen it materialize, right? But I kept kind of going to sort of what my core values were, going back to my business plan, and then really refocusing on what I could do better each, like year by year, in order to get things off the ground. And then when COVID hit, I think a year later is when I decided, well, if everything has taken a pause, I think this is my best time to sort of catch up, right, to my competitors. And that's when I really decided to take a second leap of faith, which was to get a physical place, a physical location, in order to actually start providing services out of.
Wow. Yeah. I think that's a breakthrough for so many entrepreneurs, because they're like, what I see online is people skyrocketing in the first month or two.
Yeah.
A year.
No.
And you're like, nah.
It took me 3 years, and boy, was it miserable. Because again, at that time, you know, my partner at that time, she's working, right? And so you start to feel less than, right? And that's the one thing that people don't normally share, right? It's like, The how you feel going through the journey, even before you can actually start making a dollar off of your idea. No one is ever really as honest as they should be about that. When it's like, no, the road was not that. I knew it was going to be hard, but not this hard. Right. It was difficult. It was extremely difficult. Right. And so for all those 3 years, I did not have a paycheck coming in. Right. And so it was crazy.
Yeah. It's good that you had that crazy faith. So you kept going. And I want to talk about, in this time, what were some of those challenges that were impacting maybe your business and track, and how did you kind of like manage that?
Okay, so the first thing that comes to mind was the ability to draw interest from potential customers, right? Because I was fairly new. So how do you build that trust amongst new consumers in order for them to be able to say, all right, we're going to start coming to you, because it wasn't quite there. It just was not there. Mm-hmm. And so that was probably the reason why I was a bit apprehensive about getting a location and then starting and then really providing those services, right? Because I was thinking logically, no. Let me build clientele. And then once I have clientele, I'll then move into my physical location because now I have to start paying rent and other expenses. But it just wasn't working. I was not getting any customers. I was marketing on Instagram, but none of that was working, right? And again, we're a for-profit company. Like, we're private and we're small. Meanwhile, you're competing against state-run agencies that's been around years, longer than I've been alive, right? Mm-hmm. How are you competing? How are you going to be able to get that? All right. And so it made it really, really difficult to really be able to get that and get off the ground and get going. But fortunately for me, when COVID did happen, I just decided to, you know, just take another leap of faith and see what happens from there.
Mm. Wow. And so taking that leap of faith, you've had some major success. And I want to talk mm-hmm. about the milestones and success that you've been able to accomplish mm-hmm. with track activities thus far.
Yeah, no, it took, so we, again, 2018 was when the name Track Autism was actually like a business name, right? We were registered as a business name, but we really didn't get going until May of 2021, right? Which mm-hmm. is when we actually started seeing customers actually come in. And so that was one of our biggest milestones, right? So because back then what I realized was I needed to build trust. And so mm-hmm. the only way to do it was to offer my services for free. Crazy, right? Even crazy. Yeah. After 3 years of not making money, now you're offering your services for free while paying rent. So,
okay, this is good.
So I'm sitting there going, okay, I know for a fact if there was mm-hmm. a somebody with an MBA degree, they're probably looking at me and judging me like, you are doing this all the way wrong, right? Because now you're offering services for free. Meanwhile, you need to start getting revenue in. So our milestone came in when, again, I was offering our services for free. So we're getting customers coming in, right? So we have, at that time, I think we had like 6 kids coming in. Mm-hmm. And for the next 6 months, we didn't make a dime off of any of them. And largely because when they were coming in for free, we were also learning that they didn't even have the resources to be able to pay for it, right? Mm-hmm. So I had to spend the extra few months helping families navigate through the complex world of Medicaid in order to gain access to that, in order to pay for our services. So I literally had to then reinvest in the customers that I was offering my services for free and work twice as hard to mm. be able to get them the means of support that they were going to need in order to then generate revenue for my company in the long run. And so it became one of our biggest milestones was being able to assist all those families. And then once they were able to get it, start making a dollar. Mm-hmm. That was such a huge milestone.
And you know what? I love the fact that you talk about the milestone was even that you were doing it for free. It was just mm-hmm. getting people, getting those customers, the people who you were looking to target in the door. And then exactly. the dollar came after that. So how did you make your first dollar?
So our first dollar, I remember it to this day. Mm-hmm. The first check we received, I think, was the amount of $180, right? Mm-hmm. And somebody may look at it and go like, wow, that's something to be excited about. But for me, it meant the world to me. Yeah. It was the first time. It was the first time I was actually seeing someone actually write out a check, mm-hmm. right? And our business name being on it, and then we're being paid for this amount. It made it even more realer in terms of like the journey that I was on. It made it like, at first it was like, all right, we have a place and then we're offering service, but it wasn't actually real until I saw that paycheck that was billed towards our company. That's mm-hmm. when it felt real. So from that point on, I was like, oh my God, I don't want this feeling to ever go away. I just want to continue to be able to garner more interest and get more consumers, more customers in order to pay for our services. And so that was huge. That was huge for us.
Yeah, that is huge. And it's so many light bulb moments for this conversation. One, it's like, so you're doing a thing where you're not making money and then you're mm-hmm. still offering services for free. And then mm-hmm. you make a check and it's $180-something. So most people say, I don't know about that. So for you, in this moment, what made you, I know it was like, I don't mm-hmm. want to lose that feeling, but mm-hmm. for a lot of people, they could think this is still not enough mm-hmm. to cover my life. I got people judging me. I'm not feeling like what society expects of me I'm doing. So for you, what made you keep going? And then what made you keep doing track?
What made me keep going was that at this very moment, now I was not only married to an idea, but I was also mm-hmm. committed to, I can't even call them my customers anymore. They're more like family at that point, right? Mm-hmm. To those who were receiving services that I was helping get Medicaid, get these resources that would help pay for my services. Because once I was able to figure that part out, I figured, mm-hmm. well, the most important thing for me then in business was that I need to continue to make sure that I have people walking through the door, because that's the value, right? Mm-hmm. And then once I have that value, even if they don't have a means of paying for my services, then my next thing that I can offer them is helping them get to the money. And then from that point on, in the end, my company will be able to then start generating revenue. It was a very simplistic way of kind of looking at the world, but that's the way I kind of had to approach it, was that as long as I had people in mm-hmm. my company, that's value. That's valuable. Because no matter what, I know how to pivot when I need to in order to help them help me, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
That makes perfect sense. Yeah. And Lucas, can you talk about some of the programs that Trek mm-hmm. offers?
So currently, right now, we offer varieties of recreational classes that includes yoga, music, dance, art, fitness and exercise, basketball, and hiking. These are the services that we offer. We also have an after-school club that focuses on improving social skills amongst individuals with special needs. And then outside of that, now we've created a subsidiary company that's focused on providing applied behavior analysis therapy, because we realized years later, oh, this is also a need. And so at this very moment, we're having to pivot again as a company mm-hmm. in order to be able to accommodate all of these different services.
And that's so good. I love all of the programs and all of the offers. And it makes me think about even going back. So how did your services change over time? And you kind of mentioned the pivots that you were making. Mm-hmm. If you could talk a little bit more about some of those pivots that you made along the way as your services shifted.
Yeah. So I think, again, in 2023 is when we saw a huge breakthrough, right? Not only in terms of revenue, but the amount of clientele we were getting, as well as also being able to expand, right? So we were not only providing services in Yonkers anymore, we're also now doing it in the South Bronx, which mm-hmm. was huge for us, right? Yeah. But then at the very moment, what I started to learn again was just kind of understanding that things never stays up forever, and it also never stays down forever, right? So as mm-hmm. good as things were in 2023, while we were anticipating a sort of a repeat, what I underestimated was policy changes, right, within the state, right? Things that affect businesses down the line. And so we didn't get a drop off in terms of numbers, but in terms of what the insurance were willing to pay, that became a huge issue. And so as we started to see that, I quickly realized, oh, this is going to be a very, very difficult 2024. So how then do we start pivoting towards a new form of services that we know families can also benefit from, which was what led to providing applied behavior analysis therapy, right? Because I felt that, oh, okay, this is a great piece, because we're still not going too far off of our core value. In mm-hmm. fact, we're adding something that was really, really, I think, a very staple piece in terms of a child's development, right? And providing that sort of a therapeutic aspect to them in order then to implement once they start receiving our recreational classes again.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. And yeah, that's a big piece, like the policy, like nobody mm-hmm. probably would think.
No, no one thinks, right? You never think about that, right? So things affect you when you don't see it coming. And boy, did they really affect us. But I, at this point, I think we're hopefully weathering the storm and really anticipating mm-hmm. a huge breakthrough again in 2025.
Yeah, certainly. And in 2023, you also instituted mm-hmm. a home visit program. So I want to talk about, even with this shift, so the shift that mm-hmm. you were making in terms of the having to navigate the policy changes, all of these changes, how did that affect your organization, and how did you place orders or support in order to do these things?
So again, here comes that crazy idea again, right? Where you're noticing that a lot of things are happening, but you remember that, again, what exactly are our core values? Our core values was always to provide services and support to individuals with special needs, right? But in order to make sure we continue to do so, we need them to actively keep coming and walking through the door. And so as policy started to affect them, all I kept telling was to family was, keep them coming, keep them coming. Now, mind you, what does that mean? I'm having to pay staff when we're not making money as we used to make it in 2023, right? But my main goal was, again, when you start the journey of providing therapy or any form of services, especially within this community, one of the biggest staples is that you want to create a consistency in terms of schedule, right? And so if a child is used to coming in every single day, you don't want the drop off to happen, because then you will start to see some regression. So I started to figure out that, hey, maybe I just need to bite the bullet a bit more as we pivot towards ABA, because what I saw was that there was going to be a light at the end of the tunnel. So I'm going to have to reinvest my time into families in order to not only help them now navigate towards accessing like resources when it comes to Medicaid, but also figuring out ways to then get ABA therapy as another means of services, right? Because now families are like, okay, we're interested, but how do I get to that point? So that means now more time being invested in them, but we're not making money off of that time period, because the main goal was that in the long run, once they have those services, boom, we can start recouping again off of that.
And were there any resources or organizations that you leaned on during this time to help you like navigate these situations?
I would say currently right now, so what we did was we ended up partnering with a company called Hemospic of Rockland County. They're huge, and we've partnered with them, and we continue to partner with them in order to provide other services with them. And so when the ABA idea came in, I quickly figured out that going out on my own independently to be able to bill insurance and sort of manage that was going to be a little bit more complex than I thought. On top of it all, I also didn't know that the wait time for being able to be approved to be an in-network provider would take so long. And so as long as it was taken, I didn't want to keep holding up families. And so I thought that the best thing for me to do was to sort of lean on to a larger organization that has the experience in providing this. And so it was just literally earlier this month is when we signed the contract with them in order for us to partner with them in order to provide ABA for our not only our population, but also folks that are interested that may be living within the five boroughs.
Oh, wow. And Lucas, in this process, you were like, it's about the families. It's about helping, making sure that we're going through with this mission, despite what we're facing. Were there any specific families or stories that really stick out to you in this journey?
It's kind of hard, right? I always say this, the entrepreneurship journey is a very lonely journey. You're definitely going to have family support. If you're in a relationship, you're definitely going to have a spousal support or support from your partner. But I always say they don't necessarily understand totally what you're going through, right? Despite how much you try to explain it, right? It's difficult for them, you know, and most of the time you always hear, at least for my family, hey, we're going to continue to pray that everything goes well. We're going to continue to pray. And it's like, you kind of want to lean on that, and you know they're coming from a great place. But sometimes you want to also talk to somebody who can really sort of provide some feedback towards what you're going through, because it's all new for us. All new for me, right? Because I'm constantly having to pivot. Whereas I always thought of businesses, you have an idea and boom, as it's continued to go, you just figure out a way to continue to make it consistent. But that's not necessarily the case, because as things change, you have to pivot, right? Mm-hmm. And so while I did lean on my family as much, it was also being able to sometimes even come to Communitas America to have a one-on-one with Samoon to talk about what I was going through, because oftentimes I think we relate more when we share stories and experiences, you know?
Yeah, that's true. And I definitely can relate to that. I oftentimes think about when I was in my journey, my mom was basically like, I can pray for you. Same. So I can definitely relate to that. And
yeah, and it's great, right? Because they're coming from a place of, you know, yeah, a good place, but it's like, I need something a little bit more.
Yes, ma'am. And what about the families that you were helping or the clients mm-hmm. that you were helping? How was those impacts being made or something that you can remember from those that you were helping?
Well, I think one of the biggest things that I quickly realized was that mm-hmm. whatever idea I had, right? If we're going through a troubling time, I never made them aware, and I continue to never make them aware, right? I always kept things the same, no matter how often things would change, right? In terms of whether it's insurance, whether it's even transportation to our services. Like if I have to come figure out a way to come get your child to be able to bring them to program, I'm willing to do that, right? I'm willing to invest mm-hmm. in that, right? Because again, my main goal was that the value was always my clientele. Right. And as long as I had them in the long run, we'll be able to sustain any sort of pressure that we were facing, because at the end of the day, the main goal was to be able to come out in the long run in terms of continuing to provide services. Right. And so as long as we were trying to find ways to add on as mm-hmm. opposed to remove, that was always my mindset. And they continue to remain loyal to us, which was always great.
Yeah, that's beautiful, and that's that relationship that you've continued mm-hmm. to build, definitely. And Lucas, you also talked about the shift that included ABA, and mm-hmm. I also read that a subsidiary was created in order to provide these services. So mm-hmm. what are the advantages of forming a subsidiary concern, and does it have a different name?
Ilios, yep. Ilios. So Ilios Behavior Care, which Ilios was like, I quickly looked it up, all right? I think it's like the Greek goddess of mercy and compassion, which uh-huh. was where the name was derived from. So but the main advantage I would say in this was, the reason why there was such a huge advantage was, again, we weren't going away from our main goal, which was providing services in terms yeah. of the neurodivergent community, right? We wanted to stick within the same frame of mind, right? And so having a subsidiary company now allowed us a little bit more freedom. And here's why. When we created Track Autism and we started partnering with other agencies in order to provide our services, we were a bit limited in what we could do. Largely mm-hmm. because of certain policies that were put in place, right? So if you're providing services to individuals on the spectrum, you couldn't necessarily call your company Autism, because they felt as if we were marketing specifically towards their clientele, which mm-hmm. we were, but they wanted more of an integrated services, right? They want a program that any child can come to, which I think, and you know, I can understand where they're coming from, right? Yeah. So, but we were a bit limited, right? So in order to continue to work on those same contracts, we had to change our name. So we went from Track Autism to Track Activities, right? So on yeah. Instagram and all these different places, we were marketing, but we weren't getting the same pull, because families now didn't know whether we were servicing those with special needs, right? Because it wasn't, mm-hmm. it just wasn't there, right? But now having a subsidiary company, it almost felt like having that cousin that could do the things you couldn't do.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And so it allows us to market. It allows us to now provide classes. It allows us to really focus in on the community in which we were trying to provide those same services while still uplifting our main organization, which is still Track. Right. So Ilios ends up marketing a lot of the different things for Track. It allows us to market towards families that are looking for recreational services along with ABA services. So there's a lot, but there's a whole lot more freedom in our subsidiary company as opposed to our main company.
That's good. And how do you balance the management of, you have the subsidiary company and then you have Track? Mm-hmm.
There is no balance.
There's no balance.
What? There is no balance, because there are certain days you just wake up and you go, this is it, the day where I'm committed to Ilios. And then the next day you go, this is the days. But it's mostly also sometimes just having a team that you can yeah. trust and put in place. And so for Track, I do have the staff that have been with me for quite a bit of time now. And so that helps out tremendously. It allows me now to really spend and gear in a lot more time towards Ilios as we continue to transition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Lucas, I now want to talk about a little bit more of the challenges. So of course, there are many successes, and this journey has not been without its challenges. Mm-hmm. So can you talk about any stories about the planning related to moving from a learning and study phase to now recognizing the need for a person-centered program in your community, and also to a more mature phase in which you provide these multiple services?
Right. So in terms of challenges when it comes to that, it was more so the main goal in any form of business is, right, whatever it is that you're selling, whether it's a service, whether it's a product, right, you want to make sure that there's quality behind it, right? And so for us, the challenges really came from, again, being able to make sure that the therapy that we were doing was quality. But not only that, the therapists that we were hiring were also quality, right? But you never know what you're going to get despite how wonderful the resumes may look, right? And so navigating through that, going through interviews and all of that, you're thinking, oh, you know, we're setting up for success. And so, and oftentimes you don't quite know a person until you've hired them and now they're on the team. And then later on down the road, families are now complaining because, again, we're shifting towards person-centered approach. And so we want to make sure that that all incorporates what the person's needs are and they're being met. But if the therapist is not as experienced as we thought they were, it presents a huge number of challenges. And then if the parents now want to transition away from that, now you're having to go back to the drawing board and now looking for new candidates. And then now you're second guessing whether this person might be a right fit. And so there was a lot of challenges in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's tough. And how do you feel like are the lessons that you've learned and how do you approach it moving forward?
I think the main lessons that I've learned was, again, it's just really doing our best in terms of like our due diligence, right? So being able to now put more of these staff members on a there's a word for it. It's just escaping me, but more so they're employed, but you give them at least maybe 30 days trial where you're kind of seeing how things are going. But before they're fully on board, right? So that's something that we've now had to implement where it's like, no, we're going to hire the staff. And then but at least for 30 to 60 days, we're really going to watch and focus on ways in order for us to support the staff, but also making sure that we have the right staff in mind and sort of building towards a better future when it comes to our employees, right? And so that's the new things that we've now implemented as opposed to before where it was like, oh, you have the resume, you have the skill sets, you have this, you have the certification. All right, I think you meet all our requirements. It's a little bit more now, right? We're really now doing more of an supervisions, more so than before. Yeah.
And are you communicating this with them or it's kind of like something that's known internally?
Communicating with who?
The applicant.
Right. So during the onboarding process, this is being, it's definitely being communicated to them, but also I do have a clinical director who actually was my boss when I was working before I launched my company, who's also now sort of spearheading all of that. Right. So kind of delegating some of my responsibilities towards her has definitely been helpful because now she's able to make sure that all of these things are being communicated towards new staff as they start the onboarding process.
Oh, wow. That's great. Okay. So Lucas, we have to stay there because that is interesting. So how do you go from you're a boss to now you're the boss? Like how does that happen? Or how do you make sure that you're moving to a space now I'm the leader?
Well, so in terms of
will you used to work for someone?
My relationship with my, of course. Okay. So that one, you know, I think every experience comes with a story, right? Of course. Yes. Right. So between my relationship with her was always great, right? Because she was my supervisor at that time, right? But even back then, I used to talk about the idea of me and her creating a business of our own. And because she had all the experiences, I did it, right? Right? Like she had all the credentials, all these fancy, schmancy stuff. And I'm like, you could be the CEO of this and I could help it. But what I quickly learned is not everyone is made to take those kind of risks. They'll take certain kind of risks, but not those kind of risks. And so she always understood that about herself. And so I've always learned to respect that about her. And so once we were able to get track going and I was able to be able to afford her and bring her on board, you know, that discussion was had. It was like, listen, I need you for this, this, and this. The same thing I saw you doing for the other company, But now, guess what? As we continue to flourish, I don't mind paying you more, right? As we continue to grow, because I know you're great at what you do, right? And so having that understanding helped immensely.
Yeah. And I think that's so great. And I asked that question because, you know, it's interesting because oftentimes it speaks to who you are as a person that someone is like, I see this vision. I see that for you. And I want to help you continue to push this vision forward. So that's even beautiful how that happened. And
yeah,
yeah, she has the credentials. That's good.
You know, she had it all.
And you talk about stories. So any stories of like obstacles that you faced and the steps that you took in those stories?
Okay. Yeah, of course. I definitely got one that really jumps off at me. I think after our first year of being open and we are really suffering financially. And at that very moment, I was thinking of all options, right? Because again, at that moment in time, I had basically, because I stopped working in 2018. So it's been a couple of years since I was employed by anyone, right? And so now I'm looking for loans. I'm looking for this. I'm looking for resources that would help us really stay afloat. But my company is sinking financially. But it's still a relatively new company based on, I guess, businesses have a credit report as well. As you know, as individuals, we have one, but businesses also has one. But because mine was fairly new at that moment in time, I couldn't really go get a loan business-wise. And as an individual, it was very hard because you also needed to have pay stubs. Mm-hmm. But during that moment in time, we weren't making money for me to be able to pay myself and have a pay stub. I didn't have all these things at my disposal. And so I remembered May of 2022 thinking to myself, maybe it might be a time to at least figure out a way to kind of go back to work, make some money financially to really continue to fund track along the way. And I remember at that moment in time, she was my girlfriend at that time telling me it's a bad decision. She thinks that I should continue to figure out a way to kind of keep track moving forward. But at that moment, I thought to myself, well, how could I? I mean, there's no money. There's no place for me to go get money to be able to fund this. I have to pay rent. I have to pay staff, right? Like, how will this continue to work? Needless to say, I think for what it's worth, I did find a job. I did find a position that I was going to work at. And I kid you not, for whatever reason, everything was done. I did my fingerprints. I did my background information. And a week before I was set to start, I got a call from HR saying that there was some discrepancy on my resume. And I didn't think anything of it. I was like, okay, so what was it? They were like, oh, you put that you worked for this company between this time and that time. And I said, oh, okay. And they were like, yeah, when we did the background check, we learned that you were there for 3 years, but you put 4 years. And I said, well, it was, to my mind, I was like, okay, what must have been a common mistake? I mean, because again, I've been far removed from being employed for a couple of years. So I've never had to really update my resume. So I thought it was a common mistake. And so I asked, I said, well, am I still going to get this job? Because in my head, I'm thinking, hey, I got to pay rent next month for track. I don't know what I'm going to do. I need this job.
Right.
And I got the call back saying, no, unfortunately, they were not going to move forward. Oh. Okay. Literally 15 minutes later, a loan came in. I'm like, no way. I thought it was BS. I thought someone was pulling my leg. Literally 15 minutes later after this call, a loan comes in. I'm like, what? This can't be real, right? So I quickly applied for it. And I'm like, I know they're going to ask me for pay stub, and I'm not going to have it. They did it. Instantly, hey, you've been approved. You're going to get this check in the mail. I'm like, a check in the mail? I thought loans, they send it directly to your bank account. I don't know. This can't be real. I waited a week later, the check came in. I'm like, oh my God, we have a lifeline for three more months. We have a lifeline for 3 more months. not only did this loan help in those 3 months, but what ended up happening was we got more clientele that were willing to pay more for our services, right? And so we had some coming in the morning, some coming in the evening, within those same very 3 months. And so I think the lesson learned in all of this is that you just keep going no matter what. Yeah. No matter what. Yes. You just have to be persistent.
That is amazing. And I feel like for you, probably after that happened, it's just like, I'm supposed to be here. Nothing else can
matter. Yes, like, nothing else mattered. That's exactly how I felt. I don't discuss my faith a lot, mm-hmm. but at that very moment, all I could do was like, no, this is beyond even me at this moment. Mm-hmm. Like, this is beyond me. And I should be thankful for this opportunity, and I can't give up. And I think that's what has always stayed in the back of my mind, that this situation did happen, and so this is exactly where I'm supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is powerful. Oh, I love that for you. I love that. And such a beautiful story. And I would love to dive more into the funding mm-hmm. process now. How do you approach funding these days?
Oh, these days is a little, I'll tell you, these days, the options are there.
That's good.
The options are there, but the entrepreneurship journey for me, it's mm-hmm. a long journey, because no matter what I've been through, I continue to learn things each day. Each day mm-hmm. I continue to learn. So even when it comes to funding, for example, because now we've been able to generate enough revenue, and so we look more appealing, right, to lenders. And so when trouble does arise, it's easier to go and draw a line of credit from such and such institution, or with us, because we've always banked with Chase. Chase has been great in providing the resources we need mm-hmm. in order for funding, which was something that wasn't there when I first started, because we were relatively new. And so that was understandable, right? And so you almost had to have skin in the game, survive, go through that process, live long enough, find some success, and then the lenders will start believing in you because mm-hmm. then your options starts opening up. So that was great, because I never felt like I had to go take out a personal loan. Everything was like business wise. And that was great. Yeah.
Yeah. That is great. And what about grants? Mm-hmm. You're applying for grants, and how do you approach even the grant application?
Same thing. So normally we go through, I think the name is Hello Alice, which is huge mm-hmm. because it continues to notify us of new grants updates. And so each and every one that comes up, I quickly read it and I go, okay, we may qualify. Boom. And we apply. And most of the time we don't get it, but it's okay, right? Because mm-hmm. at the end of the day, they just keep coming. But there are moments where you do find other programs that are willing to fund you, because every dollar goes a long way. So whether it's $500, whether it's $1,000, it's a grant. And so mm-hmm. it's very, very helpful to us. And so we try to make sure we don't leave any stone unturned.
Yeah, I love that. And I love the fact that your approach is that we might not get it, but that's okay.
Right.
Yeah. And so have you found in this process that there are any challenges when you are applying for grants?
I think so, because I think more often than not, again, this is just my opinion, but sometimes mm-hmm. I think it would have been a little bit easier if we were a nonprofit, right? Because then the many doors would possibly open up for us in terms of really applying for X, Y, and Z. But being for profit can present a little bit more challenging, right? Mm-hmm. Because and also nonprofit, you can always fundraise. You can all and because of the tax benefits to the person donating, it's appealing. But for for profit, it's not always quite there.
Yeah.
And so it could be a bit challenging. However, again, it's one that we don't stop, because again, Hello Alice does a great job in letting us know exactly what some of the pre-qualifications are. And oftentimes we do meet it. And so we apply. I mean, and if, you know, what's the worst that can happen? We're told we were not approved, and that's okay. And we just keep going, you know, because again, the main goal is to continue to be persistent.
Yeah. That's it. And I think, a lot of people, well, not a lot of people, but some people can understand the fact that you're saying like, it might be easier to go nonprofit, but we're still mm-hmm. persistent in this for-profit model.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. And you know, and again, there are moments where I've always thought about maybe I should go and switch over and pivot towards nonprofit. I'm not saying that it's easy, because nonprofit also has its challenges, of course, you know, but at the end of the day, I go, no, this, when I developed the plan, although you could tweak, you could change certain things, but I try to, at the very least, keep the main core thing the main core thing. And so what has allowed us to flourish is staying for profit and staying private. And so that's what we'll continue to do.
It's great. And Lucas, you've also spun it into a vocational program. So it was made possible by grants. So how do you determine which one of your ideas, well, which of your ideas would make better sense to be funded by attaining a grant as opposed to supporting the idea with other kinds of revenue?
Well, I mean, being honest, I think all of my ideas could be. Let me stop.
That is true. I get it. I get it.
But I think the main goal is that every idea that pops up, I always think to myself, well, it's large. It's much bigger than myself, the individual, like. On a macro scale and on a micro scale, like, there's a benefit to all of it, right? So even when you mentioned the vocational piece, when we got a grant to be able to start providing vocational opportunity for some of our clientele, it really was a huge thing. But I always realized it was a need because, again, working in a nonprofit sector for so long and working within the field, I've always known some of the difficulties and the challenges that affect most of the individuals within the neurodivergent community. And so realizing that, I always sort of created ideas around those things, right? And so whether it's a vocational opportunity where I'm like, hey, if, you know, we're already working on a pre-vocational aspect of it, right? However, if we can fund, if we can get some funding in order to provide a way to be able to increase these individuals' level of independence, that would be great, not only for them, but also in the meantime, as they continue to work on their money management skills, what better way than to, for them to have a job, right? It's a very good selling, marketable idea to sell to others, right? But it's a very impactful idea, right? And so that's how I create these ideas and figure it out. And I also listen to the family, what they're looking for. Not only 5 years from now, 10 years from now, right? And one of the biggest things that I'm now hearing from families are residential, like places for the adult son or the daughter to live, right? That isn't necessarily, let's say, a state run, right? Yeah. And so that's kind of gearing towards real estate. And I realize it, but it's something that I believe is achievable. I just need to sit down and really narrow down exactly how the plan would go.
Yeah. Oh, that's so good. And another thing that I love about your mission and the work that you're doing is that empowerment, growth, and joy are part of the mission. So how do these ideas translate into the practical expenditure on necessary items or improvements such as like equipment, spaces, renovations, all those things?
So in terms of empowerment, in terms of all of those things, again, I'm really big on really learning from those that I work with, including those who are coming in and are paying for my services, right? It's big because we're in the health and human service field. So already, right off the bat, you're going to be forced to empower folks because that's the field you're in. Right. But on top of it all is also the communications between myself and the clientels, as well as the families. Right. Figuring out ways in order to not only improve our services, but even where they're coming, where they're spending the majority of the time. Yeah. Is it beneficial to them in the long run in terms of creating a learning environment for them? Do we need to pivot away from it? Because, you know, our motto here in Westchester is that we've rented out a couple of apartments, right, in a luxurious building, right, to provide our services out of because it has the amenities in it. But does it necessarily mean we won't ever explore the idea of getting a storefront large location, right, to be able to run it out of? Maybe, but in the meantime, I think what I the feedback that I continue to learn from families is that, hey, you know, I enjoy the fact that your place looks like a home, right? Yeah. Because those skills that are being taught there can then be generalized when my child comes home, right? Because there's some familiarity in terms of how the setting looks, right? So all of those feedbacks really helps us tremendously in terms of where we're going.
That's great. And also, you don't do this alone. So you also have a team. And I want to talk about the team that helps support you. So can you describe some of the different roles and how you all work together? And how do you find them?
So most of the time, what you end up learning is that we are constantly always hiring off of Indeed, right? And so when we get an applicant who comes in with a, you know, a really solid resume, you know, we review it and we go through it. And oftentimes those who have experiences in the field, sometimes they're great workers, right? They're wonderful workers. Mm-hmm. Other times, our biggest success have been those who have no idea what they're walking into. They've never had an experience working with a child with special needs.
Wow.
But they have a willingness to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And they come in and it's like they're learning on the, but you see their face, you see their enthusiasm, you see their excitement, you see all of these factors, things that you would think that somebody who's already in the field would already have it,
mm-hmm.
but it isn't quite necessarily the same, right? So when we learn, when we find those kind of individuals who come in and they may just be an art teacher, right, at a public school.
Yeah.
But they've never worked with a special needs individual. And they come in and we see the way they communicate with our individuals, the way that they support, the way they teach. And then from that point on, you know, I start dropping nuggets like, hey, you ever thought about being an ABA therapist? Hey, you ever thought about, you know, because you start seeing that some of these same skill sets can be generalized. And and from that point on is how we really build a core, strong foundation amongst our staff. And it's really figuring out, all right, you came in for this, but I feel like if you're interested in doing more in this field, we can hopefully get you the right training and then get you on board in order to not only teach a class, but also work with our individuals.
Yeah. So I bet you have a high retention rate because it's like you're kind of like nurturing them through this process, right?
Yeah. So most of the team that we started out with back in 2021, they're still here.
Yeah.
Right? We may lose one only. We did lose some, but mostly because of school, right? So we lost some really good staff, largely because they had to go to the university and the university's far away. But during the time spent with us, it was great. And so they look forward to coming during the summer to work again, right? Mm-hmm. So I guess they're not completely gone, but you know, we do have a high retention rate, which is great because, again, you want to be able to create that as a stable aspect when it comes to this field.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I already knew that when you said it. I was like, yeah, that's perfect. It's so good. And Lucas, how do you manage a team so that time and energy are efficiently spent without obscuring the mission of your venture?
That's a very hard thing to do. Mm-hmm. Even I will admit it, right? But it's the constant communication and dialogue between myself and them, right? Them understanding that I could be on the computer for different things, right? But if you call me because you're dealing with a child in challenging behavior, I'm more than ready to come because, again, nothing makes me happier. And I don't mean to just say this, but being in the field. Yeah. That's where my excitement comes. So, but I do believe that when your team can continue to see you come in during the tough times when you're working with a child, and no matter what it is, you're not too good to be able to say, no, you guys handle it. There is a connection, strong connection between myself and them to know that, no, we're all in this together.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to our approach in working with these individuals and supporting them, because it's going to take more than just you. Trust me, it is. Because even the parents know this, right? Which is why we always call something the circle of support. Each individual needs to have a circle of support. And so that means it goes past just one person supporting them, right?
Yeah.
And so having that put in place, having the communication, having all those things shared back and forth, things that my staff are seeing that I may not necessarily see because for whatever reason, I'm held up at different meetings throughout the week. And so new behaviors may arise that I may not be aware of, but having that dialogue be there is key and important piece to our strong foundation here.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. And going to like the strong foundations and kind of some of the examples that I can see that you set as a leader, I want to also talk about the examples of engagement with being in proximity to the local community. Can you talk about some of those favorite interactions that you've had with TRAC?
Oh, man, it's amazing. It's amazing. Let me tell you, I think it's the most appealing thing about what we do, right?
Yeah.
It's really utilizing the things around us. So that the community knows that we're here, right?
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that jumps in mind is that there's a deli right behind our building. And it was one that I would often go there just to get a sandwich from for lunch. But what we ended up starting to do is I wanted to work on, again, community awareness skills amongst our individuals, money management skills. And so I'll set up opportunities for a staff member to walk with an individual into those deli for the individual to go purchase an item. That way we're working on all these skill set. But along the way, relationship began being developed between ourselves and the staff members over there. Mm. And then before you know it, I have the owner of the deli's number on my phone, right? But more so, he was able to then share with me much later on that he also has a child with special needs. But I had no idea. But he was saying, no, is watching how your staff interacts with the individuals that are coming in. It's really wonderful to see, because again, in our line of work, you don't know who's watching you. Mm-hmm. And it's very important that when you're working with these individuals and you're supporting them, right, you're doing so at the highest level.
Yeah.
Because it's a big deal, right? And so having the community really behind us in terms of the resources around us is really, really great, because those are the things that we're going to end up leaning on in order to continue to grow, right? Because again, that person at that deli may be able to offer us an opportunity. He may know someone who's hiring individuals looking for employment with special needs, right? And so having that there is a big piece.
Yeah, that is so beautiful. Like the connection, the mm-hmm. proximity. Oh, wow. Even in this, are there any challenges that you would say in this aspect of engaging with the community that you serve?
Of course, you know, mm-hmm. While some are really, really open mm-hmm. to what we do, for others, it's new, right? So when you do have a child maybe with more of a challenging behavior, and you may be in a place, a store, or a supermarket, and there's a meltdown now happening, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes the challenge here is that not everyone deals with issues the same way, right? So maybe there might be a customer there that doesn't know the child may have special needs. And so they become upset. Let's just say and here's a perfect example of one, whereas, I had an individual in the elevator with a staff, and the individual mm-hmm. went up very close to someone within the community that they saw, but very, very close. And this person did not know that this individual, had any form of special, was a special needs individual. Mm-hmm. And so before you notice, the person started cursing, but it wasn't until much later on, we were able to interact with this individual from the community, and we explained to them, and they said, oh, I didn't know. And that's oftentimes what you often hear, right? I didn't know.
Yeah.
But the truth of the matter is they don't know. Most of them don't know, right? Which is why really, really integrating my individuals within the community is such a big piece, because mm-hmm. you want to continue to raise those awareness to let people know that, yeah, there are individuals of different abilities living in the same community as you, right? And start really getting that out there.
Yeah. And, I love that example. And also, like you mentioned, like they did not know, in raising mm-hmm. their awareness. And so it makes me think about like access to resources that could help mm-hmm. in continuously amplifying. So for you, what access to identifiable people or resources do you wish that were there that are not there, or that you have been able to would have been able to obtain?
I will say this much. I mean, the awareness continues to rise, which is a good thing, right? Mm-hmm. However, I genuinely believe maybe years from now, mm-hmm. things will definitely start to improve. However, it takes a lot. I know like the Autism Speak Foundation does a really wonderful job really raising awareness. And they're a large organization that's been around for so long. But it was going to take a lot more than that, right? It's going to take small organizations like ours as well to continue to also raise those awareness as well. The schools, I mean, being located in downtown Yonkers is great, because we're also right across from the Board of Education here, yeah. right? So, and there's a huge Yonkers library as well. All of these different places are different places that offers opportunity for us to all collectively continue to raise those awarenesses.
Mm-hmm. What excites you the most about the future of TREC and where it's headed?
I think what excites us the most is the unknown, right? Not knowing, I mean, I'm really not trying to be evasive in terms of your question, but it's more so just not knowing. If you told me 2 years from now, this is where we would be, I wouldn't believe you. You told me a year from now, this is where I wouldn't know. So from year to year, things are always changing. And I think that's exciting, right? The ability to not only change, but also deal with challenges along the way is exciting because you continue to grow from it, as well as figuring out things that you need to add, things you need to take away, and so forth. I think that's exciting, right? Being able to figure out ways to expand our services is exciting. Mm-hmm. All of these things are things that we're looking forward to.
Yeah, I love that. And Lucas, you're also a part of the Communitas family. So I want to talk about the role that Communitas America has played in helping you throughout your business journeys and facing some of the challenges, maybe, whether it be connections or mentorship. What has it been like?
I think it's been wonderful. And for the most part, it's been so great. I've been really advocating and really letting others know who are in the same space in terms of the entrepreneurship journey, know about Communitas America because of the wealth and resources they have. And this is just a quick example of something that just happened. I told you about how I've now been going back to the Hay Ground just to speak with Samoon. And yeah. Edward, because Edward was there, so I want to give him his props as well, about sort of, you know, where I was at in terms of providing them a status update as to where my organization is. But they're always welcome and ready to provide resources that would be beneficial to us in the long run. Sometimes they don't even know, but they go, well, just try connecting with such and such. They might be helpful in terms of where you're trying to go. But one of the biggest key thing was they set me up with somebody from JP Morgan and Chase because they have sort of a mentorship program that's going on. And I didn't think much of it in the early beginning, but I was like, let's just see where it goes from there. But when I was finally able to sit down and do an introduction with the person I was scheduled to meet with from JP Morgan and Chase, talking to just this person alone felt like a weight lifted off my shoulders. Wow. Because one, not only did they know more about our business than I thought they did, largely because we've also been banking with Chase. I didn't even make the connection that they knew about all of that, right? They knew about even our bankers, the banker that Track has been assigned. They knew about all these different things.
Yeah.
But circling back to just Communitas as a whole, having those resources there have been so greatly beneficial to me because, again, for someone like me, I do very well in being able to really throw ideas at people, especially people who may have some familiarity regarding my business. And so having that there through Communitas America has been a game changer for us.
Yeah, I love that. And just like that personal touch of the organization knowing more about your business. And even in the beginning, Lucas, you spoke about how you took this leap of faith and you did not have all the answers before you started your business. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of people, they might find that they don't have a resource like Communitas to support them as they develop their business. But it's important, like you said, you're sharing the resource, you're sharing the work. Mm-hmm. Or what would you say has been the most impactful throughout this journey when it comes to Communitas and your business development?
In terms of that, I think it's being, to be honest with you, is also being just simply honest about your journey, right? Being able to be very honest with yourself as to where you are at. Because it's okay to say, I don't know where I'm going. I don't know if I'm making the right decision. It's okay to be reflective and to be honest because there's always someone willing to help you. But whereas if you're not and you're making things look better than what it actually is, that's when you begin to find challenges, right? I'm never too scared or too shy to ask for help, no matter where I'm at. And so knowing that I can just pop in and Samoon could make herself available or Edward could make himself available. It's really, really great for me, no matter where I'm at in terms of my organization. Yes, where I guess we can't call ourselves a startup anymore, but at the very least, we're still dealing with challenges. I mean, God, Amazon deals with challenges. Yeah. So why wouldn't I deal with challenges?
Yes.
You know, but being able to lean on Communitas America because I'm being honest about where I'm at, no matter where I am at, through my journey has been really, really beneficial to me.
Yeah, I love that. And that we love Communitas. And that's a breakthrough for somebody who, like you said, you don't, it's okay to say, I don't know. And then to have that resource that says, it's okay as well. So, finally, what advice would you give to entrepreneurs who are passionate about making an impact in health and wellness development and education, but who are just starting out?
My advice is for them to start and start as soon as possible, because again, this is a community, this is a field that greatly need the numbers, right? It needs people. It needs people who have an idea that is all about helping someone else. Because at the end of the day, I find myself doing one thing and then before you know it, adding more to it, largely because there's a need somewhere else within the same field. And so if someone else is thinking about starting themselves within the health and human service field, trust me, my only advice is just to start and be persistent and be committed to your ideas, because as long as it's centered around being able to help others, you can't possibly go wrong.
That's powerful. Just start.
Just start. Lucas,
we thank you for just starting and just being committed. And we also thank you for being on the Communitas of New York podcast.
Thank you so much. This was wonderful. I had a blast. I'm not even gonna lie to you.
Yay!
It was wonderful. It was wonderful reflecting, because I don't get a chance to do this. And so it's great having someone ask about where we were and where we are now. This was amazing.
Okay. I'm so glad. We are so glad. Thank you again.
Visit our website for more information about this and all of our shows. You can find that in the show notes. Thank you for listening and see you soon. My name is Monique T. Marshall and this is Communitas of New York. Season 1 is produced by Simone Jung and David Michael D. Gregoria.